Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Cabin Country Media is proud to team up with the Off-Off-Broadway Troupe and the Clearwater County Leisure Craft Assemblage to bring you another edition of Pontoon Theater. Tonight's dramatic presentation features the stage work of Buddy Bailey and Mr. Raymond Hackett, both actors lauded and awarded for their fine stage work. This broadcast also features the George Severs family new 35-foot pontoon boat, boasting an Ott Scatwater 4-stroke, 150 horsepower on the stern. Tonight we offer Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And the action picks up with Big Daddy beginning to voice his concerns to Son Brick.
Son, I thought I had it.
Had what? Had what, Big Daddy?
Cancer.
Oh.
I thought the old man made out of bones had laid his cold and heavy hand on my shoulder.
Well, Big Daddy, you kept a tight mouth about it.
A pig squeals. A man keeps a tight mouth about it in spite of not having a pig's advantage.
What advantage is that?
Why, ignorance. Ignorance of mortality is a comfort. A man don't have that comfort. He's the only living thing that conceives of death, that knows what it is. The others go without knowing, which is the way any living thing should go. Without any knowledge of it. Why, I wonder if...
Hey, George, how's it going?
What, Big Daddy?
I say, I wonder if a whiskey highball would injure the spastic condition.
No, sir, it might do it good.
Jesus, I can tell you, the sky is open. It's open, boy, it's open.
You feel better, Big Daddy?
Better hell, I can breathe. All of my life I've been like a doubled-up fist, pounding, smashing, driving. Now I'm going to loosen these doubled-up hands and touch things easy with them.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Pontoon Theater. We'll be back again next week with the company's pontoon adaptation of Henrik Ibsen's Hedda Gabler. Join us again next week at the same time for Pontoon Theater. This is the Cabin Country Broadcasting Network. From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman, with another woodland escape. Welcome back once again to Cabin Country. I'm Fudd Klugman.
And I'm Bjorn Lloydsted.
We're finishing up with May here. I'm about to head up for the Memorial Day extravaganza.
Yes.
Weekend
yes.
With the family, our
indeed.
First trip of the year. I've already been up twice with my dad, putting in the dock.
Right.
We got the tracker in, but the lift is, well, it's in the water, but it's not in the right place.
Yeah, you're saying it's not exactly set up where you want it to be.
No.
Do tell. What's going on here?
Well, we had to push the dock out, 8 feet farther,
sure,
4 feet farther.
Sure.
I don't know.
You built a section, I understand.
Yeah, I just built a cedar plank section.
Nice.
For the front end of the dock.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can get the lift out a little bit further, because last year it was a little too...
A little shallow.
The river
was down a bit.
To get the boat on the runners of the lift, I'd have to kind of get a nice, straight, ramped up start and come to a skidding stop right on the runners, which...
Coming in hot!
Which isn't a bad way to go, but it's not the textbook
right,
way. You're supposed to just kind of float in there,
and
kill the motor,
raise up the lift.
And, you bet.
So anyway, my dad and I, it was getting kind of late on our last trip up there, and we were tired, and we pushed it out too far, and I couldn't level it off right, so then we winched it back in, and now it's up to waiting for you and I to,
I think,
place it up there in a couple of weeks.
We might be up to that challenge. Indeed.
So,
yes.
Before we get too far into summer,
I
wanted to give a special fan appreciation. Boy, I can't talk tonight, Bjorn.
Fudd's about to plié. It's become a bar class. We're all about ballet.
That's right.
North Country Ballet Company. Anyway.
Well, a couple of months ago, well, back in March.
Yes.
Got a letter and a couple of pouches of power bait here.
Wow.
Berkley Power Bait.
Berkley Power Bait.
They're the pre-rigged swim shads.
Fish hold on 18 times longer.
Wow. Well, and those were sent to us by our super fan, David Barnett.
Yes.
From Teaneck, New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
We've referred to him several times, I think.
Without a doubt, yeah.
And read a story of his quite a while ago, I think, about when he just purchased a new place.
New cabin home.
Trying to convince his family that they're going to love it.
Absolutely.
Sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But he sent us an interesting letter that we're going to have Bjorn read for us here. When he and his wife were thinking about traveling, I think, out of the country, but plans changed, and they ended up in this neck of the woods, Bjorn.
Indeed. Time and tide can change at any point, and if you don't mind, Fudd, I'll read David's letter here.
Please do.
Right. But, you know, postmarked here, March 2022. Dear Bjorn and Fudd, I'm composing this letter on the first day of spring. Congratulations. We made it. In anticipation of your upcoming fishing adventures, I've enclosed a selection of my favorite lures. Last summer, I caught two of my personal biggest fish on them, a massive largemouth and a huge, beautiful, and tasty perch. Here in the Northeast, perch are quite the game fish. I wish you tons of fun and luck fishing with them. In February, I celebrated a big birthday and had planned to spend it in Italy with the wife. Having not traveled since the onset of COVID, we were eager to get away and see more of Europe. Unfortunately, we canceled the trip a few weeks prior due to Omicron, and as you can imagine, we were quite disappointed. Having the vacation time already scheduled, we decided to travel domestically. My wife was pushing hard for a warm destination, perhaps Miami or Scottsdale. I spent a lot of time researching these places, but just could not bring myself to pull the trigger and book it. I wasted so much time doing my research that time had nearly run out, and it appeared we would not be traveling anywhere. And then, late at night, just a few days before my birthday, it hit me. I knew exactly where I wanted to go. Ice fishing in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I was so excited and energized, I couldn't sleep.
Oof, defeat.
I only needed a few days to make all the arrangements. Airline tickets, a car, a 24-hour ice house rental on Lake Minnetonka, and a quaint Airbnb nearby. By some miracle, despite the ridiculously cold forecast, my wife agreed to join me. Not for the fishing, mind you, but for the long weekend. Although nervous, she agreed to drive on the ice and drop me off at noon on Thursday and pick me up at noon on Friday. Did I mention the -8-degree temperature forecasts? My time on the ice was amazing. 24 glorious hours of eating, drinking, and fishing. Of course, looking for the full Minnesota experience, I also listened to the reruns of Cabin Country Podcast and another show whose name I don't remember, but I think it was Prairie something or other. Anyway, we enjoyed the rest of the weekend, too, and even went to the Mall of America on Saturday night. We had a wonderful time, and everyone we met seemed to fit our preconceived notion of Midwesterners, kind and friendly. Not lost on me is the dichotomy of the two potential itineraries for this birthday trip. I ricocheted between Rome and Minnesota, obviously two extremely different destinations. One is all about absorbing the history, art, and architecture of the ancient world. The other is about trying to entice a crappie to eat a maggot on a hook through 8-inch holes in the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps because of the big birthday, I find myself becoming philosophical when reflecting on my Rome-Minnesota decision. It has caused me to realize the duality of my life and my interests. In many ways, I am similar and have all the trappings of most everybody else in my suburban neighborhood, a few miles from New York City. Sophisticated white-collar job, a bunch of academic degrees, and a fancy car. The difference is that my friends and neighbors are into Broadway, golf, and fine restaurants, whereas I spend my free time and am happiest at my simple, single-room cabin fishing from my kayak. Unfortunately, when I speak about my outdoor life and activities with my friends, I'm met with comments and questions that range from amused curiosity to mild derision. Listening to you and your outdoor enthusiast guests is always a real treat for me, since I don't get to enjoy these types of conversations in person. I am 100% convinced that I'm your biggest fan for precisely this reason, since I rely on you and your podcast for the conversation and discussions I can't create in the real world. Keep up the great banter and fun stories, and I look forward to every month. David, from Teaneck.
Awesome.
New Jersey. Outstanding. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
Thank you. Great,
well, that's
great tale. Great tale.
When I sent him an email, good Lord, man, this is amazing. Thanks for sending this.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
So cool. And it is pretty bizarre that he ended up in Minnesota
right.
ice fishing in the cold. Yeah, so he got to experience that cold.
Eight below. Let's
yeah.
Get out on the ice. If,
wow.
The big lake.
And Lake Minnetonka.
They call Minnetonka, yes.
Incidentally, I've been on Lake Minnetonka, but I've never fished it.
I feel like I was on it once for like a tour of,
yeah.
of you know, it was like a work gathering, and let's look at these amazing homes and just
yeah.
enjoy the wonder that is this massive western suburban
right.
lake, you know, and then maybe on a pair of water skis at one point, too.
Oh. But
certainly never standing on the ice, trying to entice
yeah.
a crappie to chew on a maggot. On a hook through an eight-inch hole in the ice, yeah. I thought to myself, maybe, you know, better lake.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, maybe, and I'm hoping, again, here, Fudd, I will come back to this repeatedly. If we encourage, we suggest strongly, we encourage our listenership to please write in their fishing tales.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
someone can say to us, no, Bjorn, Fudd, you don't get it, man. Minnetonka in ice fishing season? That's like
yeah.
the hot spot. That's where you
yeah.
want to be. That's the, you know, the largemouth and the
right
cold water perch. Although I wonder, I don't think they're not quite the same. David, I got to be honest, they're not quite as thrilling a catch here in Minnesota as they
right.
seem to be in the wooded Northeast. But they're popular out in South Dakota.
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
And
and
grow to be quite large.
I seem to remember that if you visit the Sportsman, one of the Sportsman's shows that they have during the winter months in downtown St. Paul or Minneapolis,
right,
they'll one of the outfits is called Perch Express, where
oh,
they
wow.
you get on a train, get out to South Dakota, and then they outfit you and you go perch fishing.
Absolutely.
Because it's a thing, you know.
You bet.
And as we always remind people, they are related to the walleye.
They are relatives.
So
kith and kin,
there you go.
Walleyed pike. So it's exciting stuff. But I love getting that letter from David.
Yeah.
He is a frequent contributor, you know, by our listeners' standards. And
yes.
all I'm saying, people, is send in your stories. You know, we would
send
love
in
to
your story.
Get your fabulous tales of angling successes or losses and or just cabin experiences. We are
right.
We are more than excited about the idea of sharing your tale on our show.
I'm a little bit self-conscious, Bjorn, that one of our biggest fans here in the Twin Cities, a friend of yours,
yes,
you know, who's just great at telling us all the things he enjoys about the show. He
right, was, right.
On our last one with the White Sidewalls, he really enjoyed that. It sounded like we were having fun, but it also kind of hinted that, well, I mean, it's not really, you know, fishing and cabin country, but it was good. Yeah. So I thought, are we going a little too far astray?
Yeah. Have we wandered too far afield, Fudd?
Well, not to worry, because later in this episode, we get to hear some, well, quintessential, you know, Gull River cabin shack stories from
right.
none other than Uncle Joe again.
Uncle
and,
Joe.
And his son, my cousin Doug.
You bet.
And Fudd Sr., my dad.
Amen.
Who else? Even my Aunt Carol chimes
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
This was a recording that I had done back in 2017.
Oh, wow.
So it was just before we launched Cabin Country, actually. So
wow.
I think it was like an
yeah.
early recording. I think it's something I always wanted to do, regardless
right, right.
as to whether or not it would end up on Cabin Country.
Shack fishing history, shack
had
tales
yeah.
from yesteryear.
Oh, yeah. And so well before the train interview.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun. I had 3 hours of stories.
3 hours.
But I whittled it down to about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And some of the highlights we get to look forward to
ooh.
are things like, well, we get to hear firsthand the story of Doug blowing by in his 250 horsepower motor over my cabin neighbor Rick's fishing line.
Cutting the line.
One morning, cutting the line.
Hey, Dad, I think that guy's upset with you.
Right. His daughter Ellie was in the boat.
Yes.
Dad, I think that guy's mad at you. stories of the early days that Doug remembers of going up to the shack, and, for instance, they would go up in the wintertime,
mm-hmm.
and my Uncle Joe would take his four young boys,
right,
and he would hook up the duck boat to his snowmobile.
Okay.
And pull the boys in that and
wow.
make wide turns, and they'd all go flying out
crack
of the boat.
The whip kind of thing,
yeah, crack the whip. The boys would go flying. And then their good friend Skip, he is another character from the Shack stories.
I feel
Skip,
like I'd skip.
He would complain about, you're ruining the rivets of that duck boat. So they, a few Skip stories.
Skip was the guy that didn't like getting close to the...
The Sylvan Dam.
Too close to the dam.
We got whole movies of that where apparently that's, you know, my Uncle Joe just liked to torture him.
Right.
At any opportune. We'll hear some more of that. And of course, one of the main things, one of the reasons I wanted to dig out the recording was stories about my grandfather. We called him Gramps.
Yes, it's Gramps.
Gramps. You made us happy up there.
Yes, my mom's dad, and he was all about the gear. He had top-line gear.
Joy to us.
He was outfitted.
Well decked out.
Well decked out, even though he really didn't care to actually kill anything.
Right.
Do any real serious hunting or fishing, for that matter, but he just liked being out there.
Liked being decked out in his L.L. Bean gear.
Looking good,
yes.
Yeah. So we get to hear about that.
Outstanding.
And then lastly, Aunt Carol, I get to ask her about the murder story in the neighborhood.
Oh, my.
Here we go again.
True crime cabin country.
That's right.
Wow.
An old resort that was on Lake Mille Lacs. It was called Wolf's. W-U-L-F-F-S. F apostrophe S. F's. Anyways, apparently he was a ne'er-do-well. Nobody seemed to like him. And he won this resort in a card game. And, he had...
ill-gotten booty.
Had a girlfriend who was a caretaker at this resort, and something happened one night where she disappeared. And so we get to hear a little bit of...
Interesting.
Not extensive details,
retelling of a true crime tale.
Right. Something that was never, followed through, and nobody...
Middle portion of the
did
states.
Any, yeah.
Wow.
So all kinds of fun stuff.
Wow.
Coming up ahead.
All right. Well, that sounds exciting.
Rightio.
I can barely wait. Let's get some mitts a-brewing.
Yeah, let's refill the coffee here, and let's start it out here.
All right.
This first story is my cousin Doug's account of the morning he was zooming along in his boat with his daughter Ellie and flew by my neighbor Rick's dock, going way too fast to notice that Rick was actually standing on its fishing.
It's a true story.
Yeah.
She said to me, she goes, where is the channel? You always talk about the channel. And I said, it sweeps. And I was explaining to her what a channel is because she heard it but didn't get it. And I said, it cuts right tight up to the banks and it's early in the morning. You know, it's like sun just came up. Beautiful glass morning. So I'm ripping along. I'm showing her exactly where the channel is. She's like, no way, Dad, because I'm going by the lily pads off where that rope swing is.
Yeah.
And I'm cutting back over. He says, there's Uncle Bill's place, and it goes right next to their shore. That's where their docks are sideways. And I'm driving on it. He's in a tan outfit on his tan dock. I'm ripping along, going about 30, which I usually slow down through there for you. Yeah, and all of a sudden, Ellie just goes, Dad, you just drove over someone's line. I'm like, no, I didn't. She goes, yes, you did. I said, there's no one at the Weiss's. She goes, it's not your Uncle Bill's. It's the guy back. I turn around and he's literally got his arm, and I drove 15 feet off his dock. And we're ripping by the docks. I turn around, I literally said, hey, I apologize. I didn't see. I'm showing my daughter the belly of the channel. She wanted to know what a channel is, and I explained it to her. So I offered him a lure. I said, what were you using? He goes, a black spinnerbait. And I got out a black spinnerbait, new line, and I said, here, this is for you, and he wouldn't take it.
Heard me talk about the shack many times on the show because it's where my dad took my brothers and I until he finally got a lot of his own down the river in 1987. There was so much character to this old single-room shack with the barn red siding and the exposed fiberglass insulation on the walls inside and World War I bunk beds and an old fuel-burning stove. And there was this old commercial-grade white metal paper towel dispenser hanging on the wall over a sink with a hand water pump. And on it were written instructions on shack maintenance. And when I asked Doug what happened to the dispenser, it led to other sentimental items that were tossed out, much to my Uncle Joe's disappointment.
I asked Doug about the, remember the old paper towel dispenser with all the instructions on how to take
care of the cabin? That was Skip put that on there.
Yeah. Oh, Skip did that?
Yeah, that was his way. Oh. But then he'd say, have a great time.
Oh.
He maybe leave you a six-pack of beer, you know, in the end. But he went, here's the way we do it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I do remember the last line was like, have a great day. Or
yeah,
great
it was,
time.
Yeah.
Huh.
What about Skip? I wish I would have kept that paper towel dispenser. It went in the trash.
What happened with that?
Yeah, that was a rain weekend with me and Mike, and you couldn't walk in the outhouse. There wasn't a drawer you could have put a matchbook in at the cabin, and we just got sick of it. It's like it was time. We just had bought all new fish and stuff. We went in the store, new rods and reels, and Mike grabbed an armload of rods, which to this day I'd pay $1,000 for, because it had your old Zebco 33 with the steel rod. We broke the tip off, and we put a new tip on it. We had all these old grandpa's old Shakespeare. It had a cork handle with a metal aluminum or steel handle and a red knob that tightened it down, and the rod was clear. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I'd pay anything to have all those old rods. And we went out in the outhouse. We threw the old generator away. We just cleaned. It was time, right? But we should have kept a few nostalgia things. But, you know, you're not thinking that in 1991 in the place that had never been cleaned. Wow. I mean, never been cleaned, like windows and and drawers, clear out drawers. And he chewed our asses out when we got home, just reduced me to 12 years old. I'm a 30-year-old man.
I got a little different memory of that.
And the funniest, let me finish. And then the funniest thing, he turned to me and he said, if you threw out mine and Skip's coffee cup, you're in serious trouble. And Mike literally lifted up the coffee cups and he goes, Doug, and I said, oh, God, don't throw them. Because they drink their whiskey in that at night with a Coleman going playing cards. So at least we didn't throw the coffee cups off.
On a warm and humid Brainerd night, a nervous child walks with his flashlight to the crapper.
Yeah, that old outhouse Doug is talking about was pretty creepy and yet fascinating with all the old stuff in it. But it's gone now. Replaced by an amazingly sturdy and fully functioning bathroom and shower. The shack itself has been renovated as well, and finally powered with electricity.
And then we officially got power back in the cabin last year.
Oh.
We fired it up this year. We ran the trenches, and we tied it in this year. So 2017, we finally
have electricity. Do they have a light bulb in that damn cabin? No, not a light bulb. All kinds of fancy chargers and shit for cell phones. And they got the switch on and off for the pump, for the water pump.
Yeah.
And their refrigerator keep their beer cold. But they're not a light bulb in that joint. You still got to crank up your battery, your flashlight. So they did a hell of a good job, I'll tell you that.
Carol, how many times have you been up to the shack?
I think two or three times in 40 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've been there 4 times.
Well, in the past 3 or 4 you have.
Yeah.
But up until we stayed down at Wright's Harbor Hilton now, and we rough it down at Dale's house. That's really rough it.
Yeah, I would guess. I don't know what it's like inside.
But we do drive there up to the shack, though.
Oh, okay.
It was here once, Bill.
And we stopped there overnight, and I never went back. But now that it's so nice up there and all my family's up there, if we go up to the Wrights, we always go and see the kids, of course. Yeah, so.
So was it wasn't nearly as weedy in the
Oh, gosh, no. Back when I started, it was rice and lily pads.
They call it northern milfoil or coontail, and that's what's choking the river out. And it literally choked the rice out.
Yeah.
Bloomer writes that there's somebody dumping shit in up the river. Now, it comes out of Gull Lake, and it's nice clear water. I've been to that dam, and it's clear water. But Willie says somebody between there and 210 is dumping shit in. Yeah.
Well, when I canoed, I remember Ryan and I seeing cows standing in the water.
Right, they're right. Peeing. Yep. They even had a fence that went out into the water so the cows could come down and walk into it.
And where is that? Where
right past the bridge. As soon as you go past that bridge in the northeast corner of the rice paddies.
Yeah.
It's you go underneath the bridge and you take a turn and it's right there.
Oh.
It's only up, not even a couple blocks.
So a little cow shit caused all that milfoil?
Well, that and a fertilizer. And of course, I don't know if they fertilize.
Yeah, for farmland.
Yeah, farmland. I mean, I don't know if they do that to pasture land, but for...
But some of these homes have awfully nice-looking lawns.
There you go. Well, that's just like, we got a pond behind our house.
We all do here.
And it's just solid green, and it's just from...
Fertilizer
from all the yards that are up the line.
And how about the duckweed, too? We never had duckweed.
Yeah.
That stuff's...
Girls don't even like to swim that. We try to blow it out. But,
The first of three times our boat was loaded with water. I drove up there and I looked out and, my God, the boat's gone. I just saw the duckweed. I could see the point sticking out in the motor.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Really?
So
so much water or a storm? Yeah.
Besides rain, when the wake people go by, like I said, in these...
Whoever speeds by those...
250 or...
Who's doing that?
Horse, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Now they have wake boats up there.
Yeah.
I know.
Have you seen them?
No.
That's probably what's sinking you. There's wakeboard boats that are up there. There's two of them up there, and they throw off a three-foot wave.
Well, that's what it is.
We saw one going up. We passed it.
Whoa.
Big-ass motor on it. Not too far back, Jimmy gave me Skip's old. He had a 7.5 horse, or maybe a 5 to a 7 horse Evinrude.
Smaller twin. I think it's a 3 horse.
Maybe no, that's more than a 3. I bet it's a 5. It's a little Evinrude from way back to beat all hell. It's a good backup motor if you're going to be fishing. Yeah. Now these guys, these 250 horsepower sons of bitches. I'd love to go and put that in that old blue Lund and go chugging down the river.
My dad really lucked out in 1987 when he put a bid on our cabin property for $1,101 and got it. Then he spent the next couple of years constructing the cabin in his head while walking on his mail route.
I wish now I would have had, back then I had the tools I got now with these battery-operated saws, because we didn't have electricity. I cut every board by hand, every roof joist, everything by hand.
Yeah. Did you really?
Everything.
Oh, yeah.
You're like that guy in PBS, Into the Wild, or remember that? What's that show?
I didn't have a power saw, not even. Well, there's no electricity, so I cut every joyce, every thing, whatever. So
I remember building the cabin. I only saw him write one figure down with a pencil on a 2x4. Everything else was in your head, and we just cut what you told us to hold.
Yeah,
he figured it out the week before he went up there.
I think that's what he thought about walking his mail route.
Yeah.
There's a couple of crooked things that I won't tell anybody about, but there's even a couple of roof joists. You can't see them now, but I marked them, and then I marked them wrong, so I turned it over and marked them the right side, but then when I cut them, I got the wrong side. So I got a couple that, instead of 16 on center, one of them's 18 and one. Well, you can't see it, and what the hell's the difference? You know, a few inches here, a few inches there. But again, I did it all by hand, and one of the best things I ever did. I mean, it's a labor of love.
There's not many cabins I look at and smile, and every time I drive by yours, I hope you're there. And then I don't know, something about that cabin, I just dig.
Yeah.
Because it's yours, and I dig you, maybe.
You got it well figured out, and you thought that thoroughly.
Well, like I said, the only difference would have been if I'd have thought, had a little more forethought, made it bigger,
So were there any, all four Donovan boys and you stories?
Even in the winter time.
Oh, okay.
I remember going in. I had one snowmobile. I borrowed it from John Burkhart. So I parked out in the main road. It was too much snow to drive in. I took the kids in, all four. I couldn't leave them far apart because, you know, the kid would be alone for too long. So I'd go about two blocks and drop somebody, go back and get another one, and bring them two blocks. We leapfrog like that into the place. So we get somewhere in the middle of that, and I got Joey, and he gets on, and we go to the next stop, and I look, and he got barefoot. He got just stocking feet.
Oh, jeez.
And I says, Joey, where's your boots? He's back, Dale. Holy shit. I go back and look around, her footprints all over there, pee. Somebody peed at two footholes, and there's the boot. We'd pull that old duck boat, that old 12-foot duck boat, that flat bottom, we'd pull that behind the snowmobile.
Oh, okay.
Skip them would bitch at you that you wrecked all the rivets.
Yeah, they did. They all leaked because you can spin it. You'll go take a tight turn, it would spin out, you know, like, like a water skier.
They
would fly in there, and they'd hit a piece of snow on the ice, they'd skid, hit a snow, and then boom, all four of them go flying.
But in the duck boat. Yeah. You see, you were worried about safety. Yeah. He was not.
Yeah, he could have cut their head off on that damn old duck boat.
That's a true story.
Can you remember that?
Never heard of
I was so little.
Yeah, you were.
Because you guys made me wait. What was the rule? You had to be 6 years old to go to the cat, whatever you bullshit you gave me.
On that one, you might not have been on that one.
I don't know if I was on the, because I used that same method. Me and Rich Suchu, we'd park at the resort and carry our shit across same way.
But Joy was little, so I think Ma was determined, and she'd decide when they could go to the shack.
Oh, I'd be so pissed seeing these guys leave all packed up, guns and dogs.
It was me that gave you the okay. It was your mother that.
We have so many stories that they just all barf out of us at the fire pit and the more bevies we have.
Yeah, the memories
But there's
back.
Just so many of them. It's like I wouldn't even...
Know where to start.
Literally from Joe having on the biggest fish I've ever seen in the river and want you to take the pole. Remember that?
Yeah.
The sturgeon we saw up there or whatever the hell that was to mornings where we limited out. And running out of hot chocolate. I used to drink all the hot chocolate. They'd get all pissed off at me. I just keep pouring it. They're all busy hunting. I was too young.
You'd make
I
would
drink all the hot chocolate.
The 9-horse Corsair. Was it the Corsair?
It was a 5-horse Corsair. Blue and gold and silver.
Blue, yeah.
My dad had one like that.
Okay, so we go. A big day was down the Crowing. And there was an old haunted house on the south shore of the Crowing. You remember, just old wooden. It fell down eventually. It's gone now. But that was a haunted house. That was a big trip down there and fish a little bit here and there and whatever. So when we're going to go, we take a whole loaf of bread, full loaf of bread, all sliced up. Take it apart, make peanut butter and jelly. The whole damn loaf. Then seal it back up. There's lunch, boys.
Okay.
That's it. Fancy shit.
There's that's good.
We wouldn't be two blocks from the cab. They're all having a sandwich. It was that little boat. It was quite a trip, you know. Chug, chug, chug.
Sure. That's a long way.
And if it didn't start, it broke down. That's a long roll home.
Long roll.
But and we always managed somehow. And then they play in that damn old haunted house. And I'm sure you were in that.
Yeah, I remember being in that. I always thought it was the one across the road on 210, but I think I was too young.
No, that was...
To remember it correctly.
I think that used to be an old whorehouse a lot of years ago.
It was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
And what, true story, I talked to Ron about it. And you know where you're going by the little pine? That road came across the river. You see the old pylons to this day.
Right.
Matter of fact, when the river was down, I took my boat for its maiden voyage, and I don't know how I missed them. Yeah. And I almost hit because they were this far into the water. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, I see, yeah.
But that was an old road going right to the whorehouse.
Wow.
And Ron knew all about it, knew the name of it, the gal who run it. Somehow he told me the story.
Wilma was a little girl up there. She was born in Brainerd.
Oh.
With a lot of sisters. And they used to go out there and fish all the time with their family. So Willie knew that was a historical whorehouse that old.
Wow. Never heard of that one. That's new to me. Huh.
So the one that's now that's got the blue tarps on it across 210?
No, they put a tin roof on it now.
Just a scab together
tin roof with different pieces of tin, and the tarp is gone. I just looked at it.
You cross 210 Mill, it's the first road on the right. First building on the right. It's an old son of a bitch. It's all gray.
Yeah.
I do have one really vivid memory of probably the first time I was at the cabin or those early years when I couldn't hunt. And it was Mike and Pete, Joe and I think Greg Walters, colder in hell. I'm hanging on to my Joni hand warmer just for just the life of me, right? And I was laying on the, I was little enough where I was literally laying on a bag of decoys that I smashed down, and I was underneath the nose cone of the herders. We just busted the boat out of ice and it was freezing. Jeez. And he's all lubed up from the morning before or whatever, because he's got a stogie, his hat, and no gloves. And I can see right between the two sets of boys, I'm just sitting there thinking, he is the toughest son of a bitch in the world. Because I have gloves on with the hand warmer, a hat pulled all over, I'm freezing, and there he is just... stogie glowing, heading up our fearless captain with no gloves hanging onto the gunwale, you know, steel or aluminum, whatever it was. And I just remember thinking, he is the toughest son of a bitch in the world, my dad.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't put gloves on hunting? I don't know how you did that.
I put him out in the truck one
day. He came home and cried. I had that so cold.
But anyway, I don't know who else might have been there. We were packed full, people on the floor, from wall to wall floors and sleeping bags. And so I put Doug out in the truck, in the front seat of the truck. He had a sleeping bag. Shit, that's a good place to sleep. Skip could, oh, God, he said, you can't leave that kid out there like that in the truck in the wintertime. Well, it wasn't winter, it was fall, so it was cold. But anyway, I said, yeah, he's fine. He's got a sleeping bag. He'll do fine out there. Skip kept going out, checking him to see if he's okay.
He's drunk as a skunk. I finally get the damn cab warm with my breath and body heat. Oh. And he come open the door and kiss me on the forehead. That's the spot where Skip was sweet.
Yeah.
And he took care of me because he thought he didn't take care of me. And he kept coming out, opening the damn door, freezing cold air come in. Foop, dude, how you doing? You good? You fine out here? Gooey, you gooey? You always said gooey. Yeah, if you shut the damn door, I'll be fine, Skip.
We'll be back with more stories of the Gull River in just a few moments. And now it's time for another literary moment. Tonight we have a story from Mike Leans, Down at the Dock.
Monsters of the Deep.
The dog and I arrived at the cabin late on a summer evening. It can get real dark and spooky in the woods on a moonless summer night. Still, I felt compelled to open a beer, grab a flashlight, and wander down to the dock to slow down from the stress of the 3-hour drive and soak up a bit of Northwoods ambiance before bed. I pulled up a lawn chair on the side of the dock and sat back, listening to the sunfish smacking bugs on the lily pads and the loons serenading the rapid passing of summer. The dog was a quiet presence beside me. This peaceful interlude was interrupted by a commotion along the shore of Big Island, 100 yards away across the channel. Some large thing or things, started grunting, splashing, clunking, wheezing and struggling in the shallow, weedy water. I strained to listen, trying to pick up a hint of what was happening. The dog had the same reaction. She listened intently, head cocked, alert, silent, not willing to challenge the perpetrator, with her usual throaty bark or even a low, warning growl. The dim beam of my flashlight was no help. It could not cut through the dark of that much night. The racket continued on for 10 minutes or more while I mulled possibilities. An asthmatic bear caught fishing at the edge of the island, struggling to climb the steep bank? Beavers wrestling a log, having bitten off more than they could chew? A geriatric buck deer clanging antlers off trees as he struggled to climb the slippery shore? All these and more were considered and checked off as not likely. When the splashing, wheezing, grunting, clunking abruptly ended, I had no clue. Leaving many unanswered questions behind, the dog and I climbed the hill to the cabin and locked the doors, having had enough of mystery, intrigue, and Northwoods ambiance for one dark night. It took several years to solve that mystery. Recently, on another late summer day, this time in broad daylight, I was hiking a trail that hugged the shore of a small lake. While I was pausing to enjoy a scenic overlook, a loud splashing, wheezing, grunting, and clunking commotion started at the water below, an exact replica of what occurred on that dark night. At the bottom of the steep bank, two snapping turtles were squared off. Big snapping turtles, shells that looked like they were a foot and a half wide, the size and type of which you dare not think about when skinny dipping off the dock in the moonlight. The two were locked in what seemed like mortal combat, wrestling shell to shell, hook-jawed snapper mouth to hook-jawed snapper mouth, clawing, kicking, scratching, and all the while wheezing and grunting like a pair of oxygen-challenged miniature Godzillas. They would unlock and back off, a foot apart in the shallow water, eyeing each other suspiciously. Then one would charge, if you can imagine a slow-motion turtle charge, bang into the other, and again, the water-splashing, mud-flying struggle would be on. Territorial squabble? Fight over a tasty bit of dead frog or stinky fish? A fight between two behemoth males over some long-gone but attractive demure female? I watched, not betting on the outcome. The end came rather abruptly. They separated, and one appeared to surrender, lying motionless, half-floating, half-grounded near shore. Then the purpose of the fight became clear. The winner moved to the rear of the subdued beast and mounted its gnarly shell. It was time to reevaluate. This had not been a fight to the death between two rival males over territory, food, or a prospective mate. It was the exact opposite, a complex mating ritual, perhaps meant to satisfy the female with the worth and strength of the male. I later researched snapping turtles via the usual reliable internet sources, confirmed the incident, and learned a bit more. It seems that snapping turtles can, and from my experience, do mate anywhere from spring till fall. The females practice something I will term delayed conception, somehow preventing their eggs from being fertilized for many months, thus assuring they can be laid at an opportune time to increase the survival rate of the offspring. The eggs can lay dormant for over the winter and hatch next year. Late fall hatchling baby turtles may even spend the winter in the burrow dug for the eggs. This explains another mystery, why I've found baby snappers hatching in all warm seasons of the year. I'd be doing snappers a disservice if I didn't add more information. Their specific name is Chedlera serpentine. The serpentine part translates to snake-like, given the look of their pointy, not-so-little heads. They can grow to close to 80 pounds and live on for decades, maybe even a century. They usually are not as fierce as their reputation. Most spend lives hunting and scavenging in lakes and ponds and don't go looking for trouble. However, I liked Wikipedia's advice on one issue I hadn't even considered. The common snapping turtle is not an ideal pet. That's good advice to follow, since they do have strong, fast jaws and don't like to be messed with when on land laying eggs or traveling between water sources. Given my experience, I'd also stay away from them during mating time.
All right, welcome back. My Uncle Joe told a lot of great cabin stories about his old friend Skip. And here's one that shows how guys can get into the most serious arguments about things that just aren't that serious.
Skip and I and Dick Powers, the neighbor of Skip's, went up duck hunting. This after I quit drinking. Skip was always nervous about that, you know, that I didn't drink and he didn't want to drink in front of me. But he always, eventually he would. We made a lot of trips to Canada, lots of times. And he'd get hammered. I'd quit drinking. It's 40 years ago now. And anyway, this one particular night, then I went to tell him, got a bottle of Jim Beam. I came back, and he says, "Oh, I'm not really thirsty." "You lying son of a bitch. You're dying for a big horn of this Jim Beam. And, you know, just because I don't mean you don't have to quit." He says, "No, I'm not thirsty." I says, "Okay, I'll put it on the table." I says, "You can drink it. I don't give a shit, because in the morning I'm going to throw it in the river. And you bet your ass I'll throw it in the river." "Jesus Christ, you throw away a good whiskey." Him and Dick Powers got going on this on this quart of Jim Beam. Well, and Dick Powers was like Skip in a lot of ways. He liked Jim Beam straight with a glass of water on the side. Okay. Straight. So they get arguing about the benefit of turning your thermostat down at night. You know, pretty simple thing. You save money. You turn it down to 60 degrees and go to bed, you're warm, and you get up in the morning, turn it back to 72, and you'll catch up quick. Well, one said that's a great idea. The other guy says, "No, your furnace has to work too hard. You burn more gas getting it back up to 72 than you save to keep it at 60. Pretty quick argument. You know, what the hell? Well, this went on and on, and I go to bed early. I go to bed at 9 o'clock. About midnight, the court's down to almost gone. They're still arguing about that damned thermostat. So, okay, now the whole year goes by. Next year, we're up duck hunting again. Same circumstance. I get to, by now, he understood. I would throw the son of a bitch in the river or they could drain. Either way, that's the way it's going to be. So I go to bed, and they're going to sit up and drink and play a little cribbage. So I said, at least you guys got that goddamn thermostat out of your head. Wrong thing to say. Oh, fresh. I could have tape recorded the year before and played it, and it was the same damn, again, till the jug was gone. Oh, the same exact. I gave him shit about till he died. Man, oh, man. But I still see duck, a flock of ducks going over. And if they're kind of low, I almost do that. You know, hey. You don't have a shotgun, you know, but it's just, yeah, I get excited about seeing ducks flying over within gun range. It just kind of, whether I'm on the golf course or up in the river.
I forgot to ask before, what were the main, I saw some of the old movies, you had redheads, teal. What did you get?
A lot of wood ducks and teal early in the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And mallards and bluebills.
And bluebills.
Yeah.
Bluebills. Do you remember the time when I took you and Dave down to that,
yeah,
you call that red lake bound by the culvert?
Off the little fox, or red fox.
Red fox lake.
Yeah. Okay.
Took you in there.
Yeah.
And put you on the island, and then,
yeah,
I don't know if we shot something, and I went out in the boat, and you guys stayed there, and I said, no. You know, it was a sunny day. We didn't see any ducks, and we were getting ready to go, and I was going out to get the decoys. That was it.
No, you went. I thought you went and fished. You went and actually wanted to cast.
Is that
there's
it?
No ducks. I'm going to go fish over.
Well, maybe that was it. All I know is I was out there.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking over in the north end of it, and here comes this flock of bills, and they come over the trees, and they drop down.
Oh.
And they're coming right. And I says, now get ready. Don't put the safe off till you're ready. You know, they had all the, I took them all the gun training and all that.
Yeah.
And here comes the ducks, and I'm sitting there, shoot, and I'm seeing the ducks, and they're back there, boom. Yeah, but I mean, by the time you shot, they were behind the other side of the trees. But I thought, oh, well,
I think truth you were be safe. Told, Dave and we were like cold, and I said, let's put away the gun. Let's, you know, let's probably start packing up. Oh, here they come.
Well,
so we're trying to take them out.
You can't get back in that lake anymore. Maybe with a canoe and hip boots.
Yeah.
It's just junk in that bay there, where the culvert is. Culvert, there's not a speck of water going through that culvert.
Oh, really?
The water's clear as crystal. I'm standing on that looking at it, and there's not 1 ounce of water going through.
No. Really?
No, nothing. Mm. You used to see carp going through there and bass.
We're talking here about a back bay on the river that has a small culvert under a dirt road that lets water into this really small lake. And yes, as my dad shared, this is where I fired comedically late at a flock of bluebill ducks when I was pretty young. But the culvert itself has always been one of those significant spots on the Gull River with plenty of memories attached to it.
First time I saw the culvert, it was with Gramps, and we were going up to go fishing. It was just he and I in the car. We drove. We drove to this culvert. And there was frogs by it, you know. And, you know, I don't know if I could see fish or whatever, but anyway, I caught this frog and I threw it in the water, and it no sooner hit the water.
Yeah.
Holy cow or something. So I got the rods out and I got mine and I got his going and I caught another frog and I put mine on and Jesus, I caught one right away. You know, I was like, wow, bass, you know. So he was kind of excited and he didn't have the tackle.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so I had to kind of do his. And I finally got it going and I can't remember if he ever got one or not. I think he had a hit, but I don't think he caught one. But I caught two or three bass. And I thought, wow, paradise.
Yeah.
That was one of the first trips I ever had up there. But that's the first time I ever saw that culvert. And they used to lay right in there because, you know, the fish, that's when it was open.
I still rip in there, Nick and I.
Well, I remember you caught a sunfish on a dandelion.
Really?
Up at the culvert with your dad and you and I, and I don't know who else was there. And we were looking at, I don't know if I was talking about it anyway, and you got your rod out and you didn't have any worms and you put a dandelion on your hook and you caught a sunfish.
Hmm.
Remember that.
I still stop and fish there when I'm ripping to other spots. I just turn in there quick. Nick doesn't say a word. 20 casts. We're out of there.
Yeah.
still a great spot to pick up nice bass.
Yeah, yeah, it used to be. It's got, again, like everything else, it used to be nice and clean there, but with all the weeds there, a lot of times.
Yeah, just weeded in solid.
Oh, yeah.
I remember thinking you might get out if you had a canoe or something. You might get out in that lake.
Oh, in that red, yeah, yeah. You used to see a lot of fish bones, like, you know, carcasses dead.
Yeah.
They probably were. They might have been suckers. I don't know. You couldn't tell. But they'd get trapped back there, I would guess.
Yeah.
In the wintertime.
Well, carp like going in there, because I remember seeing carp like, holy hell.
Yeah.
You know, trying to get up or waiting to get up. You understand that you wouldn't go through the tunnel. But they were there wanting to go. They'd come up and then they'd float back down and look at you.
Boy, the last couple of years, though, the suckers in that river were just going by like crazy, our dog.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I just saw dogfish. Are they gone?
No, I
caught one.
Marilyn caught one this year.
Yeah.
Just this weekend, we were bouncing creatures and worms off the bottom of the channel because that's how we were catching them. Didn't catch many. But off the dock, it can be phenomenal fishing.
So. Oh, yeah.
And we could see them, but I was on the dock Saturday morning, saw a carp come by, pretty big one, and I saw the biggest bass of my life.
Wow.
I mean, how many times have we been looking in water and seeing bass swim by? But I'm telling you, this is a 2-foot-long bass, and at first I thought, well, it's a dark carp. And then right next to it, a fish moved, and I could, perfect, that was a bass, and I was just reeling my lure in. And talk about exciting. I mean, he's going this way, and I can see him with my glasses on, and he stopped, turned and went on, and I was just like, would that be the coolest thing? But it was a missile. It's the biggest bass I've ever seen to date. And the biggest bass we've ever seen caught was off our dock by Joe.
Oh, that was one of our hot spots. We always used to come down to your dock. And
last year, we're pouring a slab for that water pump by next to the shed. I say we. I was watching. Anyway.
Well, you're still part of it. Go ahead.
Mike geared up Ellie, his youngest daughter. And then they hollered up, she got two in a row. Two casts, two bass. Mm. Oh, that's great, Ellie. Go at it, girl. And a little bit later, three casts, three bass. Third one, holy shit.
We're all walking down, what's going on?
Walking on point to watch this.
Freaking school of
six that. Cast and six bass.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I don't know what she was using, but she's got the touch. She knows how to fish.
Yeah.
And that was unbelievable. She had a big shit-eating grin, but six cast and six bass in a row.
Yeah.
Right off that dock.
Yeah.
Holy buckets.
Well, that's one of our hot spots. We'd go up there with the pontoon, and I'd cut her before we get there and put the electric motor on and going against current. In the first cast, we'd go alongside the dock toward shore.
Sure.
And a lot of times we'd get one there. But then after that, because we use the rubber worms, they're weedless and they're easy to fish.
Yeah.
Land on the dock. Clunk. we'd pull it off and then drop in the water. We caught a lot of bass there.
Yeah.
That's one of our hot spots. But the last two times this year we went up there, we didn't get a nail. I thought, what did you do, Doug? Chase over one?
Yeah. I don't know.
You cleaned out the weeds or something. Yeah, that probably is it. We had another one there that, you know, when you come around from your place and you come and you go in the bay from, you come across that point and then across the river kind of where the channel goes. And
sure.
That swing now those kids put in there.
Yeah.
Well, that point there, we used to, that was our best hot spot. We always catch bass.
That's everybody's. I'm seeing boats there.
Yeah. But the weeds have come in.
You know, it's funny. They're fishing everything. I saw guys walleye fishing there because he pulled up a Lindy rig.
Oh.
So are you going for walleye? Well, like I said, I haven't caught one on the river ever. Good luck.
Bill has.
I caught one this big. And last summer, Melinda, Dave's wife, caught.
Yeah. She caught a nice, yeah.
Kind of up by Mike's, I think.
Yeah, that bay across from Mike. You know, when you go out Mike's, there's that point of land there. There's a diving dock, like, out there. And so they fish around there. And, and that's where she caught the walleye. At least one time.
Walleye's there.
Oh, yeah. I caught them off the dock.
The crow wing.
Oh, yeah. I've caught them off the dock. Walleye. Yeah. That's a fact. That's the only place we've ever caught them. Is off our dock.
Yeah.
But I only, you know, you get water, and it's usually in the spring before the weeds come up.
Yeah.
Gramps, you made us happy up there. The shack was so much joy to us.
My grandfather on my mom's side liked to be called Gramps, and he was a significant part of my warm, technicolored memories of being up at the shack on the Gull River, probably because of the old Super 8 movie footage my dad took of Gramps and Uncle Joe and Skip up at the shack from around 1968. He certainly looked the part of an outdoor enthusiast with his expensive flannel shirts and top-of-the-line gear, even if he didn't do much actual hunting and fishing. But he loved being there, and the memories and stories about him are a big part of my love for cabin country.
We're talking about how he liked to dress up. He had all the gear, never a hunt knife on his belt, never cleaned a bird ever in his life, I'm sure, but he had the hunt knife.
Right.
Maybe he was going to stab a bear, maybe.
He was getting ready to go hunting. The kitchen table would be about 2 feet tall with all of his gear, everything anybody could ever want to go fishing or hunting.
And was it top line stuff? Did he
Indeed. Yeah.
I just remember seeing pictures of him trout fishing with his buddy, I can't remember his name.
Charlie.
And when he went with his trout fishing, he had a bamboo rod. I mean, back in them days, that was, that still is.
Yeah, it was split bamboo.
Yeah.
So how did he lose his knife? Get back to your story. He ran and was gone, and then he finally says, I know where it is. And where? He says, remember the time I took a walk in the woods by myself there? I said, yeah, he's drive back there. So I did, and he walked in the woods and came out holding his knife like that. And he's putting his pants back on. He drops it in the pile of poop he just made. The knife fell in the poop, and I hit Ted wouldn't touch it. He's carrying like this. So I take the knife and go out in the leaves, wipe it off, hit a little pond and shook it off. But he knew exactly where it was.
So yeah.
Do you know the last time he went hunting? Because I thought it was with me, because I wasn't.
I think it was.
I stayed back, and I was young.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even go down the point, because I wanted to go down by the big split trees, and there's a little bit, remember in front of the point, there's like 2-3 feet, a good stuff to stand on and shoot. You could kind of hide against the tree, and he was too old to walk down the knob, because that used to drop off kind of quick.
Yeah, that was kind of a
so I just went. He said, go get me a chair. I went and got him one of the maple chairs. And we just sat in the middle of the point, kind of where we trap shot.
Yeah.
And sure enough, ducks came by. He didn't even shoot the first time. And the second time I got him to shoot. And then he took a pop and then took another pop on another couple of mallards. Didn't get anything. And he says, I think that's about it. Coffee time. And you guys weren't even back yet. And I was dying to go hunt, but I stayed back with Grant. I'm glad I did. Because I think that was the last time he ever hunted.
Probably.
He didn't really care if he got birds or not. No. He liked to be there.
At this point, Doug's older brother Pete stopped by and joined us in the kitchen and added his own memories of Gramps.
Always had a shotgun and a hat on, sitting in a chair outside the cabin. That's my memories of Ted up at the cabin.
Yeah. He liked to be there.
I'm sure
he never shot a bird ever.
Yeah. He was dressed for the part. He was dressed the part of the hunter.
Oh, yeah.
His shirt, his hunting coat, his pants, his hat. Boots, everything.
He had binoculars. That was the first time he used binoculars. It was Grandpa's.
Oh, and if it was a serious hunt, he'd bring his six-shooter, the .22.
Yeah, he did have one.
Fancy holster. But he'd carry that. It was a serious hunt. .22 pistol. What the hell am I going to do with But that was part of Ted Benz. He liked to have be all decked out. And kind of a rhinestone cowboy, if you would. Most of all about Ted, he was a bright guy. He knew about everything. He was a bright guy.
He was smart, he knew what he was doing. I remember when I'd take him fishing, we'd troll, or I was rowing, because we didn't have the motor on the old boat. And we'd always go up towards the bridge and come back, and there was a dock there. Every time we passed that dock, we either get a strike or catch a fish. We never kept it. He didn't want it, of course, but he caught a couple. But I remember the one time we were coming down, and he wasn't fishing. I was rowing, and he blew his nose with this Kleenex, and he dropped it in the water, and he watched it sink. And I said, what are you doing? And he says, just watch it. And I said, you're polluting the river. I shouldn't do that. And I says, no, I don't think so. It's the only time I ever talked back to the old guy. Wow. He's all okay.
But he did. He'd blow it, and he'd drop it in the water, and he'd watch it. But I had some good times with him. I will say, nothing against you gals. But you know, you had four daughters, a sister-in-law.
Two sisters.
And two sisters. His brother-in-law, Chuck Riley, who didn't get along with him.
No, Chuck Riley was a truck driver
who turned into insurance man,
made a lot of money.
And made a fortune.
So they and Ted did. They weren't on the same...
But, boy, when you got him up to the shack with the guys.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
I mean, he just, you know, I mean that's what he loved about going up there.
Yeah,
too,
he wanted a you know, big part. Get away from women.
No, nothing against you guys.
You're right,
I mean,
Bill.
He played the part. He had all the gear. But it was just being there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Being there with you and Skip. And when I came, I was so honored.
He didn't swear in cuss like
we were. Oh, no. He wasn't drinking and everything, but...
I just remember the three-day weekend we went up there. One of the few times I remember going up with him. All my brothers and I. Rained the whole time. But it was one of my favorite weekends up there ever. Because all he did was smoke and sing songs.
Oh, yeah.
And tell stories.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, as a little kid, you're like...
He liked an audience. Was.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
He had the good pipes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he had that. Well, he had that voice that, boy, you heard.
Yeah, he did.
Whenever he talked. He was one of them guys. You know, and he wasn't a big man, but he sounded like it. I mean, you know, he just had that about
him. The little grandsons. Remember all those?
Basement. You keep your fingers off the
train. Yeah, Grandpa.
The rules were pretty strict.
I remember that old buffet, and maybe I have this all wrong, but I remember there's a dining room and a room right here that went into a kitchen, and there was a buffet right here. And I opened up a drawer, and he had a Gene Autry cap gun. It was cool. You remember that?
I don't remember that.
And I picked up this gun, and I, like, found it, you know? And all of a sudden, I don't know if it was a spoon or his hand, but he just slapped me upside the head and said, "Put that back where you found it." And I was looking at him like, I wanted a piece of him. I was just like, that hurt. And I put the gun back. He says, after dinner, they came over. He says, "You go downstairs right now." And I'm like, "What? He already smacked me. I'm going to get in more trouble." And he brought the cap gun down for me with some caps. And then I got to shoot. It was just me and him. It was like a big deal. And I was young because I remember the drawer was about at my head or nose. But he brought that down, showed me how to work, put caps in it, and I got to shoot it down by his train set. Kind of cool.
Spoiled.
That old house that you're talking about?
Yeah.
My grandpa built that.
No way.
36 West Rose?
36 West Rose.
I'll be damned. Oh.
The story goes, it was before the Depression. He sold it to this couple, and the guy lost his job, and my grandpa could have taken it back. But... they were a young couple and just had a baby, and he just let them have it.
Hmm.
That's a true story. Hmm. But he built that house.
This is Pa's grandpa?
Pa's grandpa. My dad's dad. Wow. Yeah.
You know, as you guys are talking, I'm thinking back to Ted, you know, different things. And I remember Ted sitting in his chair right in front of the sliders. He had the favorite chair there. And he'd have his Terra 10 100s. And he'd take a drag off of that Terra 10 and take it. The deepest breath you could ever take, and he'd exhale, and nothing would come out.
Yeah.
And it was like, holy crap, where'd all that smoke go?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the train set. We went over there, the Terra 10 100s. Yeah, that's what he smoked.
I've forgotten all about that. Did you?
Yeah, I didn't remember that.
I remember
how he smoked.
Yeah.
And he always hit that.
Yeah.
He would inhale those things like you exhale on your machine to try to get it to blow up to get maximum numbers.
Yeah.
He was working a different maximum.
Yeah, yeah.
But the train set in the basement obviously was a huge draw for us as kids. We'd go over there and we couldn't say a word about it because if you asked them to see the trains, you wouldn't get to see the trains. But if you just kept quiet and just kind of hung around and did and behaved yourself and didn't get hit in the head with a spoon, then you'd get treated into a session, a half-hour train session downstairs. And when he, you know, the funny thing is he came across as such a curmudgeon, but you could tell that it made him happy. When he got his train set going and was showing him to his grandkids, he got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
He was very proud of it, and he did get a kick out of it, but... boy, what he'd make you go through to see the trains roll down the tracks. But he had a nice setup.
He had a nice setup.
Oh, man.
On one last Ted Vance thing, you had called me over after Grandma passed and you wanted me to grab Grandpa's shirts because he had like 6 hunting shirts that were like brand new. So remember I stopped by and I'll never forget walking in the closet and lifting it up and here this guy's a medium. And in my mind,
Ted Vance was this, you know, authoritative guy and hey and...
And I just remember lifting up the shirt, laughing, and hanging it back up, thinking, man,
who's gonna fit?
How, that does not fit that voice or that man or, you know, my memories of him.
I think he only weighed about 130 pounds or something like that.
Oh, I think he weighed more than that.
Did he?
But the shirts were the finest, though. They were the best.
Oh, they were beautiful pets. How I knew, because I pulled the shirt out, it was a Pendleton shirt. Yeah. It was a beautiful shirt, but...
Looked and a little itchy. Oh, of course he never wanted them.
Not those big Donovan lads.
Yeah. Not all them. Extra, like extra large.
This last story, I guess we can call an undocumented murder mystery, which took place at a resort on Mille Lacs Lake many decades ago. It was called Wolf Resort, named after my grandmother's father, Paul Wolf. By the way, I got the spelling wrong earlier. It's not W-U-L-F-F, it's... W-O-L-F. He owned a restaurant and the resort and seemed to have some respect in the community. The family, however, did not consider him to be a good man.
He was a nasty, miserable human being, let's put it that way. And he had a resort on the lake.
Mm-hmm.
The mother said he won it in a card game. And the girls all had diamond rings, the 3 sisters, and he won them in card games. Yeah, every time they'd show something on TV about the 20s and all the crooks coming to St. Paul, we thought we'd spot him on one of the pictures, but we never did.
Wolf's Resort was still up and running 30 years, 40 years ago. Maybe it still is. Up by Onamia. You took a ride at Onamia to Wolf's Resort.
Well, it wasn't there in the 90s because I piped Onamia. The whole town, but it wasn't there.
No Wolf's Resort.
Early 90s.
Or if you wouldn't, maybe you wouldn't remember it.
I even heard that there was a mysterious circumstance with a maid or somebody that was killed there, and everybody suspected that it was...
Yeah, that he threw her in the lake when they were both drunk.
Oh.
It was just that simple.
Oh, it was that?
Boy. He had a big resort in several cabins. And she was obviously his girlfriend, and she took care of the cabins and cooked the food in the main
lodge,
thank you. And she was very nice to us kids when we would go up there. 3 in a bed.
Outdoor biffy.
Scary. Really scary.
And then suddenly she wasn't there anymore.
It turns out that my Aunt Carol's sister Theo later met a cousin of this woman who was killed and discovered that they shared similar family stories about what may have happened on Lake Mille Lacs.
So Theo and I decided that it was the same woman. He threw her in the lake when they were both drunk.
And that's about all anyone knows of this story. But I guess that's all I need to know about it. Stories of nefarious relatives in your family's past is interesting, but it's much more fun to think of your grandfather dropping his expensive hunting knife in a pile of poop. We'll be right back after this.
The Gas Station Podcast Network encourages you to join us at the pumps every Thursday at 9 for the weekly episode of Look at That Lawn, the weekly review of the best-looking lawns in the Upper Midwest. Matt CTR Zaxenhauser will chat with this week's winner and how they managed to manicure their lawn. Everything will be reviewed from the cut length to the lawn patterns chosen, from the styles used in plantings to the trimming of shrubs and trees. And don't forget, topiaries are always welcome. In the time it takes you to check your oil, you'll learn great lawn maintenance tips and how the winners cut their lawns to become this week's winner on Look at That Lawn. And remember, ZTR stands for Zero Turn Radius.
Well, I enjoyed finally getting that old recording onto one of our episodes here, Bjorn.
Absolutely.
I think I always had in my mind that, well, I'll just pick out the Gramps stories or something. But there's so many good things in it.
Yes, yes.
I thought, let's share it all.
So absolutely.
I want to thank my Uncle Joe and Aunt Carol and cousins Doug and Pete and also my dad for sharing their stories and
absolutely
memories of Gramps. Also like to thank David Barnett once again for his letter.
Pleasant tale he sent us.
I still can't get over that, dare I say, that Cabin Country Podcast had something to do with his decision to
wow
check out Lake Minnetonka.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad he had a good time with it. That's all I'm going to say, especially in that cold gosh weather.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
If
he can stay positive through that,
he
can take on anything, so...
So thanks again, David, for that, and thanks to all our listeners. And we apologize for being a little slow on getting back up on the mantle here and getting this episode out. We've had a little gap in our late spring, early summer activity here.
That's right. Some struggles, but we're back in business.
Back in business, and
shingle is hanging back out in front of the studio here, and we're ready to get going, ready to make a couple more pots of Joe.
Yes, we got to head up ourselves soon here, Bjorn.
Yes, my gosh, it's June.
It's June.
It's June.
Got to get up there and make some more stories to
absolutely
tell.
Absolutely.
At any rate, we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Absolutely.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.